From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, writer, actor, director, editor, comedian, Louis C.K. has had the most interesting career of any comic I can think of. He's worked for people from Oscar winners Melissa Leo, who's in the new season of his show.
That's right.
Louis, to Oscar winner F. Murray Abraham, who's in last season.
And this season.
And this, he's back this season. I haven't seen that episode yet. Mm-hmm. And worked with Jean-Luc Godard, cinematographer Willie Caron. Mm-hmm. He's also the creator of Pootie Tang, a movie I happen to love, Pootie Tang. I think I'm the only English-speaking critic to give it a good review. Louis C.K. show. Louis is also on FX. Mm-hmm. I've known you for a while and never had a chance to have you sit down with me.
That's right. And you really saved my life. I remember the day that Pootie Tang came out, and that was not an easy day for me. I mean, it was the day it was coming out. I had lost control of the movie. That Paramount had shoved me off of it, and it was, which is a painful thing. And then somebody brought me your review. And first they let me see the cut finally. I hadn't seen the movie. And so they flew me to L.A. to see the cut. And I remember the walk from my car to the screening room. They literally cleared the pathways. They didn't want anybody. Nobody wanted to look at me. I was such a pariah there. And I remember I went in and the projectionist goes, what are you watching? And I said, Pootie Tang. And he goes, I heard that's a stinker. This, like, old projectionist. And then I watched it, and it was just terrible. It was so far from what I had tried to make. I think there's been three moments in my life that have been that low. And then David Gale, who ran MTV Films at the time, was the only one brave enough to come and say hi to me. Great, great guy. He came and he brought me your review. It was an advanced copy of your review. And it was such a kind review, and it just made me feel so good. And I got to feel for, you know, about an hour, I thought, hey, maybe we got something here, because it's the only review I had read. And then I was given, like, the book of reviews that were so – literally, they gave me a bound book.
Oh, my God.
Of hatred that I then absorbed.
Well, it's funny because – and then a couple years later, we were on a plane together. And well, I asked you a question because I wasn't brave enough, and I sort of regret this in retrospect, because I connected the movie to Clockwork Orange always, or either the character, because of the language. And you just kind of smiled and went, okay, now what? That's it. And we talked for a long time about Clockwork Orange, which you talked with Marc Maron about. But that seemed to me so specific to this. You told me a story about how you found the movie.
Yeah.
And that you were kind of obsessed with Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, I did. I was house-sitting for a friend. I was raised in that with a whole lot of – we didn't have much money. But I lived in a town in Massachusetts called Newton, which is like – it's half very wealthy people and the other half is not very wealthy people. And I lived in the shit part. Sorry for cursing. I had friends who were wealthy, and I would house sit for rich friends sometimes when they would go on European vacations. That was the way I would make money sometimes when I was a teenager. So somebody had a Starcase. It was a thing before cable TV. You could get a box that was just one channel, and we watched Clockwork. I watched Clockwork Orange. I didn't know what it was or who Stanley Kubrick was. All I knew, I watched Green Acres when I was a kid, and I watched Beverly Hillbillies and, you know, whatever. And all of a sudden, there's this movie, and it blew my mind. Yeah, I really loved it.
Well, it's funny because we talked about this, and I just felt so embarrassed. You just said, that's okay. Hey, we're on a plane. We're in business class. Why are you worrying about this? We're fine. This movie, it was like 3 years after the movie, and you were just about to go, you just shot Lucky Louie.
That's
that
right.
And you were saying, I don't know what they're going to do with this.
Yeah, no, Lucky Louie was another of, pummeled. We made a lot of big, we took a lot of big swings with Lucky Louie. But the reason I was bold enough to do that with that show was because as big a failure and punch in the face as you could really take professionally.
It was at that point, also, by the 3 years later, it was becoming a cult success for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was starting to do well. And also, I survived it. The worst thing that I could imagine happened to me professionally and creatively on Pootie Tang, and I survived it. Like, it took me about a week to go, I'm fine. It didn't even leave scars. It gave me a wealth of information. And and rare experiences and great moments. So I look back on all of it. It's 100% positive to me, Pootie Tang as an experience. And yeah, it's grown in popularity. I don't agree with the people who love it or even your review when I look at it because I'm too close. You know, because I had expectations of it that didn't get met. But I even learned to let go of that. I even learned that when you make stuff, everybody you work with has part of it, and it alters and changes, and you go, wow. You end up getting to watch it yourself and going, well, that turned out about 40% what I wanted, but all this other stuff came into it, you know?
Well, it's the treatment. I'm embarrassed to be sitting across from my guest, Louis C.K., the creator of Pootie Tang. I'm the person who liked it. Write to me. But you were telling me your vision of the movie. If you could talk about that a little bit, tell people a little bit what you want the movie to be, because it is a movie that has found success.
You know, I never think about Pootie Tang much anymore. It's pretty far back in my memory, but it was going to just be a bit on the Chris Rock show, just a silly bit of a guy who's just so cool that his language just oozes into sounds.
Which is what you're talking about, Lance Crowther, who played Pootie Tang.
And originally on the Chris Rock show that was on HBO, then that was a writer for, and he was a writer on HBO on Chris Rock show. He was my friend, and he was in the office next to me. And I was writing this thing. I didn't know what it was, but to me it was a cynical idea. It was just like this guy's a jerk. So I wrote it, and I took it next door to Lance. And I said, hey, read this out loud with me, just as a writer, you know. Just read it out loud with me and see how it goes. So he just, without any studying it or anything, he read it with me, and he turned it into a lovely guy. Lance is a very lovely person. And he had this glint in his eye and this smile, and he just instantly turned the character into a very lovable person. And he turned that language instead into a very beautiful thing. And I just fell in love with that guy with Pootie Tang right there. It was created in that room. And so we showed it to Chris, and Chris was like, I don't know, guys. Chris is a very careful and conservative guy. He's one of the smartest people I've ever known, Chris Rock. And he's got a GED, you know. And he was like, there's no hurry to get Pootie Tang on the show. Let's just see. And then there was one Friday, there was a bit that wasn't working that we had counted on. So when that bit died, Pootie Tang just took over. Pootie Tang got called up from the minors. And it just was amazing, the reaction. People loved him. And we just knew we had something. And even then, we didn't do him again that year. And the next year, we did him once. We were very sparing with the guy. And then they asked me to write the movie, so.
It's the treatment. I'm talking way too much about Pootie Tang. Yeah. With my guest, Louis C.K., who's the creator, star, for the first two seasons, editor and director of the show, Louis, on FX. One more thing about it, then we'll be done with it.
Yeah.
You got Willie Courant to shoot the movie.
Yeah, sure.
Jean-Luc Godard, cinematographer.
Yeah, well, Willie, I met Willie because of Blair Briard, who produced Pootie Tang. Blair also produces
my show. Yeah.
And Blair produced my special, Live at the Beacon. Blair is my partner. She makes everything that I want to do happen. She never says no. It's really amazing.
Well, did you tell her that you want to do something?
Okay, so with Pootie Tang, I had always worked with Paul Kestner, who's my DP. He's the DP on my show. He's the DP on Tomorrow Night, which was my first feature, and I only worked with him. Pootie Tang was a studio movie, you know, it was Paramount Pictures, so
they wouldn't approve your DP.
No, and I regret it. I only regret not working with Paul, because Paul's the greatest DP I ever worked with, but I'm really glad I got to work with Willie. And we knew we needed somebody with a little more feature credibility, and so Blair suggested Willie and suggested I watch his movies, which I had already seen a lot of them, and that I meet with him. And I met with Willie, and he's a little round Frenchman with a polio arm, and he was part of the French Resistance as a kid. He used to be a messenger for the French Resistance in World War II. That's who this guy is. And he was very quiet, and he said to me, he just listened to me while I talked, and then when I was done, he said, I promise you this movie will have a very special look. And I was sold. So he taught me a lot. I learned a lot from him.
I would say, too, that you learned a lot from Godard, because there are some of the takes in the show that feel very Godardian to me. I mean, that's clearly an influence, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I love any kind of cinema where they tell stories in a different way, and not they don't go down the paths that you're used to. Your synapses are used to firing in certain pathways when you're watching something, and whenever a movie upsets that path and sends you into kind of a wilderness in your own mind of like, I don't really know what I'm watching now. But he has intention. And so you go, I don't know where I'm going or why I'm here, but I know it's for a reason, you know.
And there's that sense of guerrilla filmmaking, Godard, you're clearly attracted to as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I like to feel like it's a really striking image you're looking at on my show, but it feels honest. It feels like we really did come upon this, you know. That always makes me really happy when it feels authentic but startling. You know,
because I would say that for me, the real example of that is the episode, one of the ones where you're on the overseas USO tour and everybody gathers around the ducks.
Yeah.
I mean, that almost feels like it could be something out of a Godard film to me.
Yeah, that was really weird, man. That was really, I didn't know what was going to happen there. That's another thing where it was like, it wasn't, I didn't have total control there. You know, the sun was going down and we have these real helicopters sitting there and military pilots that are kind of looking at their watches like, we got to get these things back. And we have these extras, these Afghani people. There's a guy in L.A. who provides Afghani people for movies. And they come in real dress in their clothes. You know, there's a community of Afghani people in Los Angeles. And he knows who they are. And he rounds them up and pays them and, you know, gets them to wear what they wear at home. And so he came, this guy, with a bunch of Afghanis and the scene was, you know, that the guys I'm with, you know, where our helicopter gets into distress and it has to land in a field in Afghanistan. And
there is what feels like maybe a very tense standoff moment.
That's right, because some Afghani locals show up with mules and AK-47s, and it's ambiguous what their intention is. And so our escorts, they teach them phrases. They teach the soldiers phrases, American soldiers. And we got the phrase for put your weapons down, put your weapons down. So, okay, this guy who wrangles Afghanis for movies, he gave me a list. He goes, okay, I can have them yell back, die Americans, pig infidels, we'll kill you, you know. Allah, praise Allah, kill America, all this stuff. And I was like, no, he was ready for that. That's what he was expecting us to want. I said, these guys aren't terrorists. They're just farmers. They have mules. They're just farmers, and someone landed a helicopter on their property. And so when our guys yell, put your guns down, they should yell, no, you put your guns down. That's what I want them to yell. You put your guns down. I'm not putting my gun down. This is my gun. That's what I told them to yell back and forth. And so, and when I said this, I could see the Afghani people were relieved that they weren't having to play
these jihadists.
You know, so they did. We yelled back and forth, and I didn't know. And then I just sort of said generally, the duck's going to come out of my bag, and I'm going to fall down, and everybody laughs. That's all I said. And that was going to be the end of the scene. And that happened. And then I went and found the duck because I was just outside of the show. I was concerned for the duck was like in thistles, you know. So I went and I picked the duck up. And then all of the Afghanis, without the direction to do so, came towards me with their guns down, big smiles in their faces. And they came and they took the duck from me and they started laughing and talking to me. I didn't know that was going to happen.
It's a great moment. It feels very Godardian. We have to take a break. My guest, who has just compared Godard to Mark the Bird Friedrich, is Louis C.K. He's the star and creator of the show Louis on FX. It's The Treatment. This morning, come stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Have you checked out the KCRW iPad app? It's called The Music Mine. Stream music handpicked by our DJs, watch live performances, and find new music. See why iTunes calls it an essential app for music discovery. Download and learn more at kcrw.com/musicmine.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. My guest, a man of many interests and talents, is Louis C.K. He's the star and creator of the show Louis on FX. As I was watching the episodes of this season that I was sent, and what's happened with the kids on your show who are stand-ins for your own daughters is that the people you can communicate with who have ideas you never thought of. And it's this thing where you sort of see, in a way, they're kind of like a metaphor for the show. If you just pay attention to what's going on around you, you can be taken any place.
That's right. That's what kids are like. That's why kids are a great thing for your life, because they give you a new lease on it. You start seeing life as a kid, and you don't. You're constantly surprised. You know, if you live long enough, you start seeing patterns emerge in the world around you and inside yourself too, and your own moods and stuff. And but kids are totally. They do that same thing where they take you into a wilderness in your head. Like what is going on with this kid right now? And that's a great thing. It's great. My kids, my daughters are my heroes. I love the way that I love watching how they handle life and how they process it. You know, so I'm just lucky to be there to witness it.
But that's fascinating, because it's for me what you become as a comedian, because something you do on stage too, and I noticed from having seen it a few times, you take a minute to think about something, which is rare for a seasoned stand-up to do, to not be afraid of a silence.
Yeah.
And the show does the same thing. Is that something you thought you want to bring in from the stand-up?
Well, I don't think I've done it on purpose, but I think it makes sense I do it in both places, just because it's what I think it's important to do that. I think I feel bad for current human Americans, because with all the products and all the technology and the communication, no one can take silence. It's terrifying to people, I think. Everybody's got their phone on their pillow at night. Literally, I do too. And I think people have a really hard time just like coming home, loosening their tie and getting a drink and just sitting in the chair for a while. That's a really important part of human existence, is a little reflection, you know, a moment to reflect and process. You're taking on a lot emotionally and mentally in this world, and you got to give yourself some time, man. You know, nobody does that. You know, and I'm not afraid to do that on stage. It's natural to me up there. And I know the thing about being on stage is I know the future, and they don't. I have an insane amount of power over the audience. If you're in a conversation with somebody, you're equal partners in control over where that conversation is going to go. Some people struggle with that. They need to, like, bluster and yell or manipulate in order to feel like they're in control. But stand-up is crazy, because I know what I'm going to say, and they don't know. They're just sitting there and listening. So I can take a second, because I know I'm about to ruin your life with this material. You know what I mean? Like, I have 50 fastballs in a row coming, and they're going to choke you. You're not going to be able to breathe. I see that coming, and you don't. So I can take a second, take a breath, look at the audience and smile at them. And they're like, whoa, aren't you going to say anything? Yeah, it's coming. And then just hit them with a massive amount of material. That's, you know what I mean? So on the show, I try to do that too. If I'm slowing things up a little bit, it's because I know the next scene is going to be, you know, an assault on your senses.
My guess who's saving his uppercut, I guess, for the next part of the conversation is Louis C.K. He's the star and creator of Louis on FX. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. But I like that, because there are these vignettes, like there's one in the season opener, which doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue. And to have a show that will basically have two vignettes in it, and maybe 40% of it's no dialogue, what was that like when FX first saw those shows?
They always loved the show. They're weird people at FX. They really are. They
I know
just,
that was kind of a small bet for them, but still.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't spending a lot of money on the show, and they didn't have high expectation. When I started, Sunny, their show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, was an ensconced hit. They had, you know, they're doing fine. Nobody is wondering how that show's going to do. And they didn't comedy wise. They weren't doing. It was summertime, and let's throw a show on. And if it doesn't work, we always were operating under the assumption that we might just get shut down, you know. But let's try it. I think they just watched it. That when they watched the show, they just thought this is worth trying the way he does it. So, you know, but they never told me take the air out. They never said that.
That's what I wanted to hear.
You hear that a lot from networks. This was great. Take the air out. They just want it compressed. But they never asked for that. And one reason is that, I mean, it's not – sometimes there's awkward silence between characters on my show. I do a few things to make it work. Like, we make the music for the show is all made by us.
There's a lot of music in the show.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in the studio and I produce the music. And so a lot of times I use music to get people through those moments.
But there's an episode coming
up, too,
where, I mean, I shouldn't say silence, just people aren't talking. The Miami episode.
Yeah.
There's lots of music in that. And a lot of you not talking either.
That's right. We made a lot of Latin music for that episode, and there's a lot of Tati film weird little sequences and stuff. I think there's two ways we get away with the silence. One is that if you've built the dialogue around it right, silence between two people should be more powerful than talking. That's very charged. There's not a lack there. There's energy there, you know. But then with a person by himself, if you really want an audience to connect with a character, some people try to do it by showing that character doing great things, like helping an orphan or something, like doing something really sweet. They think that connects an audience to a character, but it doesn't. It makes the audience the opposite. The audience knows they're being manipulated by the movie, and audiences don't like that. The only way to make an audience really connect to a character is just leave them alone with the character. That's all. Just give them time alone where there's no one in the room, because then it's the character in them. That's when they get to be the most present. You know what I mean? They're not spectators anymore, and they're watching. They will lock in to a character they hate if they get to be alone with them, a character who they think is making bad choices and that they morally don't like. They'll just, when you watch somebody by themselves in loneliness or misery or tedium or doing something weird, you go, wow, that's, you feel privileged. You feel like you're inside with them.
My guest, Louis C.K., the star creator and editor sometimes of the show Louis on FX. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. What I just wonder, because I was fascinated when we were talking so much about how much movies meant to you, and you sounded to me more as much like a filmmaker. Yeah. Do you feel like this has become your film school in effect? Because each season the show has a different kind of emotional tenor to it.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot. I mean, I don't know. I still feel like there's so many things I wish I could do better, but that's a great feeling. It gives you a lot. You have a lot of road to travel, you know. I love the filmmaking part of it, you know. We own all the lenses that we use on the show because I like to monopolize looks, you know. So I bought these vintage lenses that are hard to find.
Are they Zeiss lenses?
I have a set of Zeiss lenses. There's Ultra Primes, and we have a set of Pancros, which are British. We have a set of Baltars, which are old lenses they used back in, like, you know, Disney movies and stuff in the 50s. And we shot Joan Rivers on the Baltars, and it was perfect for her.
And this season also, I mean, this would probably be a dream come true for you. You've got Susan Morse, Woody Allen, though, editor, coming
on
the show.
Yes,
and you're not doing that anymore.
No, I'm not. I'm still editing. I edit a lot, but she and I are working together, and she's been great. She's been a great breath of fresh air.
What was that like when you first met her? I mean, did you say, I wanted to get Susan Morse? How did that happen?
I did. I actually said, you know, I knew the editing was the one thing I had to let go of because it's the hard, it's more work than the rest of the whole, all the shows, the other things, the acting, directing, everything put together. Because you have to assemble every shot perfectly, shot by shot, which I love doing. I really love editing. And it's a necessary part of the process to me that I be the editor. But last year, I turned in episodes that I think were bad because I couldn't edit them properly. I was running out of gas and out of time. I was editing and shooting at the same time, which is natural. But for me, I'm in front of the camera, I'm behind it, and I'm cutting. It's crazy. And the cutting was the heart. The cutting was the thing I saw suffering. I'd get to a stage with an episode, and I'd be like, I'd love to take 5 more days to cut this, but it's due, and I got to turn it in. And so I bite my lip and turn in stuff that wasn't as good as it could have been. That's a huge shame. So I said to Blair, the only way I will hire an editor if it's like Susan Morse. Like, I threw her name out like that, you know, and we got her. So, you know, Hannah and Her Sisters is the first movie I ever saw that I was aware of the editing. As a young man, it's the first time I was like, well, they cut this movie really, really in a unique way, and it's beautiful. And that was her work, you know.
I've got to ask you before we go. You just started something. Well, you did something unique last year, where you put your show. Basically, you went straight to the buyers with a video of a concert you did at the Beacon. And this year, you're sort of like doing that again, democratizing comedy.
Yeah.
By basically going around let's say, ticket brokers,
yes,
and selling right to your audience. Where did that idea come from?
Well, the Beacon special I did live at the Beacon was an experiment. It was just to see, you know, part of the reason I did it is because there wasn't some other great venue. Stand-up specials are kind of they're an odd commodity. So there wasn't a great place to do it. Nobody was dying for it. So I was like, I'll do it. Let's see what, you know, LouisCK.com has the same bandwidth as Netflix.com. It's the same, you know, so it worked. I made $1 million in 12 days. Didn't expect that at all. And then I thought, well, what about tickets? I'm going on tour. I wonder if we could sell tickets. And that idea excited me and scared me. I like people to be happy they came to my show. I don't want them to come and have it hurt another part of their life. Money spent on entertainment is sacred, I think. It's because that's a big, you're doing that for your own joy. And you're taking money out of your healthcare fund to go and have a good time. So when somebody makes that choice for me, I want them not to regret it. And I make enough money. I make enough. I make a lot less than a lot of people in entertainment. But for me and my family lineage and what I grew up with, I'm making enough. So I try to bring my ticket prices down, and they cost more. Like I 1 year I was like, let's make $35 tickets. So we did it, which is way less than any other stand-ups that I compete with. And then they all went to scalpers because the scalpers are like, hey, they're only $35. That's a huge profit for me. So the fans were actually paying more as I charged less. And then the ticketing services, which are excellent services, they do a great job, but they charge a lot of money and it's punishing. So me and my agent, Mike Berkowitz, who was a brilliant young guy, thought, how can we do this? How can we do a national tour where there's no ticketing service but our own? And you don't have to join anything, and the ticket price is the real ticket price. There's no tax on it, and there's no charge on top of it. So we found a way to do it that we could bring the ticket price down to 50 cents, the service charge, and then we just ate it. It's in the price. And we had to go around the country and find venues that were willing to do this because the big ticketing services very intelligently lock up venues, and they pay them not to work with other ticketing services. If I was them, I'd do the same thing. But being who I am, I want to try to bring the price down and compete. So that's why I'm playing in Detroit. Where am I playing?
Masonic
Auditorium. I'm playing the Masonic Temple instead of the Fox Theater because the Masonic is sitting there. They're like, we'll try this. We'll try your way. So that's where I'm playing. It's turned organically into this great list of places. And it's almost sold out. I mean, in one day we sold... I think we made $1 million in an hour on this tour. So it may sound like I'm some sort of nice guy socialist, but I'm making $1 million in an hour. So
that's my favorite kind of socialist.
yeah.
Dude, we're so out of time. Thanks so much for doing this. No,
sure.
Really. You'll come back next year?
Sure, of course I will.
My guest, the creator of Pootie Tang, but more recently and widely known as the star and creator of the show, Louis on FX, Louis C.K. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Elvis. I love coming here. I'm glad you invited me. Thank you.
It's so good to see you again. Recording engineer KCRW, also mixes the show, is J.C. Swadek. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I didn't make $1 million this hour. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.